This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
And hey, everybody, I'm Jake Lancaster. I'm an internal medicine physician and the Chief Medical Information Officer for the Baptist System.
Well, folks, we have a special guest today. We're going to be talking to Corby Miller, which is the Vice President of Experience, Safety, and Quality Operations at Prisma Health. And we're going to be talking about this really robust program they have called the Pulse Program and what they've seen and the results they've seen out of that. But before we go too far into that, Corby, welcome to the podcast. And if you would, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you work at, and what's your role there.
Yes, thank you, Skip. Appreciate you inviting me to join the podcast today. Yes, as you said, I'm the Vice President of Experience, Safety, and Quality Operations here at Prisma Health. A little bit about Prisma Health. We are about 30,000 team members. We have about 18 hospitals, 305 provider practices, and post-acute services. We're the largest health system in the state of South Carolina. So that'll give you some context from which the conversation will go today. And I've been in healthcare for a very long time, going on 20 years. Prior to here, I was at Intermountain Health as their system director for experience. So I have a lot of background in patient experience, very specifically operations, performance improvement. And now I also help lead safety and quality for our organization.
Well, Corby, it's great to have you. And before this, I was able to review a little bit about the Pulse system and what y'all were able to do with it. But can you maybe just start from the beginning? What was the inspiration for developing out such a program?
Yeah, sure. So Dr. Gleason is really the thought leader primarily behind, because he's done this at a couple prior systems. Obviously, it looks a lot different here, more mature here at Prisma Health as you build programs over time. And interestingly enough, I had built some patient experience operating systems when he came and joined Prisma Health in 2022. And it was really a nice synergy and between the two of us, and really developed an amazing clinical operating system that encompassed all the domains of outcomes, safety, quality, experience. When we think of equity, population health, really, how do we integrate all of those into one meaningful clinical operating system? So that's that's how it started. He came, had some real thoughts about branding a clinical operating system. And then we started the process of identifying what would become part of a clinical operating system and what would be the structure behind that. We put the team in place and have executed in that. And so it has been live in our organization since October of 22 and or yeah, in 22. And so we have seen some pretty amazing results as a result of that in a short amount of time.
Yeah, certainly. If y'all just started it then, that's pretty impressive. But maybe I can ask, and this may be a very dumb question, but can you describe what a clinical operating system is for maybe those that have not heard the term, including myself?
Okay, sure. I don't know that I've been asked that question, but that's a good question. So, you know, when we think of healthcare is a really complex environment. I think we can all appreciate that. It's no longer one clinician to one patient like it was, you know, 200 years ago. And so when you think about how complex our systems are, we're interacting with machines and technology in a way we've never before. When you think of our workforce instability and financial pressures in healthcare, it's undeniable that we have to move toward having stronger systems to not only achieve improvement in all domains of outcomes, but to sustain that improvement regardless of the churn, right? And so clinical operating system from our perspective are all of the systems that go into, you know, having a tech stack and a platform enabled system so that we can collect data, be a true learning and improvement organization to understand where we need to drive improvement, but also putting very clear structure and systems in place around how to drive improvement. So it's not just the knowing what we need to do to drive improvement, then how do you focus folks? I think sometimes in healthcare, large organizations in particular, we're constantly throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. And we're not really disciplined about sticking to a handful of best practices and really being disciplined about executing on them and letting the results follow. When we think of Sarah, we call Sarah, she's our avatar and we speak about her all the time. She's our frontline team member. She's our frontline leader. She's potentially a system leader. But Sarah, you know, in traditional healthcare has all of these pillars, right, that she has to impact. So patient experience would be one of them. And patient experience has a set of leaders, a set of tactics to drive improvement, data around that. And then you also have quality, own set of leaders, own set of data, own set of performance improvement activities, all the way down, right? All the domains of outcomes. And so it's all pushed down on Sarah. And so Sarah, when she comes to work every day, is really bombarded with all of these asks, all of these ways of doing things, doesn't really know where to focus. And so it becomes very hard for Sarah to be able to do what she's come into healthcare to do, which is to impact health, right, in her community. We believe that the clinical operating system, building strong systems that A, provide the direction with data to know where to drive improvement and the systems to drive improvement, enables Sarah to just do the work. And then she's enabled through working through the operating system to impact all those domains of outcomes. So it becomes less about all of these different areas pushing down to Sarah and more about us building programs out from Sarah and building the system out from Sarah. So I don't know if that answered your question on what a clinical operating system is, but that's the way we think about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's helpful. You know, obviously I'm in the computer realm. So, you know, I think about an operating system, I think about, you know, iOS and other systems, about how it tells your computer to run and function as a platform where you can do other things on top of it. So I think it's fascinating. I haven't heard that term for a health system, but it makes perfect sense when you think about it. I sit back and think about it. I guess to dive further into what is Pulse, take us through some of the major components. What does it all include?
Sure. So, you know, again, it's a tech-enabled system. So we have components of that technology, which are pulse rounding. So it's our way of, through technology, collecting data in an organized way from our patients and our team members to know where to drive improvement. So, for example, with that, there's many rounding solutions out there. But to the organization, we're branding it. So as Pulse Rounding. So to Sarah, she just knows Pulse Rounding. When we think about Pulse Insights, it's all of the, think of all the way we get data in the organization, many different ways we get data. And this is our way of pulling all the data into one platform so that Sarah goes to one place to know how we're doing on the things that matter most so that she can focus her efforts very specifically. And then when you go to, when we think about Pulse Power, which is our event reporting, how we know about events happening in the system, hassles, how those are escalated and resolved through the system. That's another way we have branded our clinical operating system as part of our tech stack. And then Pulse Dash is insights inside of workflow. So the dashboards we create within our EMR so that people know how to mitigate risk in real time with patients. So you're more of your leading metrics to know how to impact the care today in real time. So those are our four main components of our tech stack that help us be a tech-enabled clinical operating system. The idea around Pulse, though, is to have a clinical operating system, and you can have that, but to brand it is a really key component for us. It helps everybody organize in the chaos around the most important thing. So now when people in our organization hear the word Pulse, they know that it's important and they know where to focus. So branding, huge part of what we're doing. And so that is one major part of our system, is the tech system. But then there's all the activities involved, right? So there's coaching that's going on. There is learning collaboratives, which I know we're going to talk a little bit more about today, but really true systems for driving improvement that all of those components of the operating system weave into, so that Sarah is doing singular activities, but impacting all of those domains of outcome.
No, that's fascinating. And you spoke a lot about, you know, the branding and how that was important. I know a lot of health systems have branded their EHR. For instance, we call ours Baptist One Care, and then we'll have our new kind of our HR system platforms coming on that we're going to call Baptist One Source. But it sounds like y'all are doing something a little bit deeper than just branding internally. Talk to me about what differentiates what y'all are doing with, you know, somebody else that just changes the name of something.
Yeah. So one thing that I'd like to mention about the branding is we're even working with our vendors on them white labeling for us. So our rounding vendor, for example, we're changing it to be Pulse Rounding, so that when our team members get into the platform, they don't see the name of the solution. They see Pulse Rounding. When they there's an application on the iPad to enter into, they see Pulse Rounding. So that's a really important component. I would say, how is this different? I would say I've not yet seen a health system pull together all of the data into one place and brand it, similar to how we're branding every activity within the operating system around a certain name, a certain brand. And so I think that's probably how we're differentiating ourselves there. But then in addition to that, we also set up a pretty strong structure around how we were going to organize and start the work of creating a playbook. So we literally have a Pulse program playbook that is paper, and it's also digital. We have an icon on every desktop that's branded the Pulse program, and anyone can access it. So transparency is huge, huge philosophy for us. So EBS can get onto the Pulse program on any desktop in our organization, can link into the program, and it lands on our Pulse landing page, and they can link into the data for Pulse Insights and see how we're doing from financials, operations, clinical performance, patient experience across the whole organization. So when you think about when you're trying to build trust within your organization and when you're trying to build trust within your community, you get there pretty quickly when you start being really transparent about what it is that's happening within your organization. And so, again, it's an icon on the desktop. Everyone has access, and they can access that information at any time. So some other key philosophies for us are, our people are amazing. We don't need new people. And in fact, we just need new processes and systems, right? We didn't get a whole new workforce when we started Pulse to then get the results that we've had. We were working with the same wonderful people who have come into healthcare to make a difference, and they've made a difference, right, through interacting with the operating system. So we have great people, and we just need to do a good job as leaders of helping the organization organize around all the domains of outcomes in a way that's really structured.
That piece about the transparency, you know, it's mind blowing to me. And I can imagine that there would be some pushback from other members of your team or physicians or other people throughout the organization related to that degree of transparency. What was that like, taking it through and getting, was everybody just like, okay, that sounds great, let's do it? Yeah. Or did you have any pushback?
So funny, when I came to Prisma Health 4 years ago, just from the patient experience space, the very first thing that we did when we were moving to a new survey vendor was we weren't transparent. So physicians couldn't see each other's data. Hospitals couldn't see each other's data. In fact, you could only see the data, I believe, in your own department. And the first thing I said was, no, we're opening it up. If you are on our platform, then you can see anybody and everybody. So I really believe in transparency. For many reasons, right? If I'm not doing well, I want to see who is, so I can connect with those leaders and know what they're doing, right? And there's some accountability built in there. But I would say, you know, I can speak about what Dr. Gleason did when he came in terms of the overall Pulse program. And then I can also talk about what I did when 4 years ago. When Dr. Gleason approached this, he really started at the board level and worked his way down. So we didn't have a lot of pushback. So I know that typically you tend to get that in certain spaces, but we really haven't. And I think this was kind of an experiment of let's put something into place. Let's not be really loud about it. Let's start seeing the results. And when the results start happening, people start to perk up and go, how did we did what? And how did we do that? And then it becomes less and less about, you know, what I don't want to have happen, as opposed to I want to be a part of that. And how do I become part of that? When I came to the organization 4 years ago, I started at the highest level that I could in the position that I was in, because I knew how important it was to get alignment at the top. And I can't stress this enough. Getting alignment at the top is critical. And when you start to talk about the plan that you want to put in place and the people you'll need to help you do that, because it's a team effort, you have to have alignment. It is just, it's that simple. You also have to decide as an organization if you're a holding company versus an operating company. If you're a holding company, then it's a financial transaction and everybody can do whatever, you know, work to improve care the best they can in their own spaces. But there's no real system alignment. And we have decided to be an operating company where we care what's happening at the department level. So your facilities become irrelevant, your geographies become irrelevant. What's happening at the department level is what becomes most critical. And so even if a hospital is performing, you know, at goal for the year, but you've got five departments in that hospital that are not, we're focused on the ones that are not. And why aren't they? And so I think you have to make a decision as an organization which way you're headed, because it definitely will impact an execution on something like this.
So let's get into the little bit of the nitty gritty, which I enjoy. Know that you have there at Prisma amazing patient experience scores. I know that they have continued to improve year after year. But, you know, I go back to the shingle model that talks about how systems drive behaviors. And as long as we have the right ideal behaviors, we're going to have the right ideal results. Can you give us an example or tell us a little bit about some of those systems that were part of Prisma program or just as you were coming on board? What were some of the systems that you had to put in place to drive the right behaviors to get you these amazing patient experience scores?
Yeah, I'm going to give you an analogy first, and then I'll get into the specifics around patient experience. When we talk about, do you focus, you hear a lot, and I think especially since COVID and during COVID, we were hearing a lot about the focus on people, right? And no doubt, we absolutely need to focus on our people. They are the people delivering care, whether they are directly delivering care or supporting the people that do. But to get there, we actually believe you need to focus on your systems first. And I'm going to give you an example. If I'm a nurse, Sarah, at the front line, and I have concerns with equipment, and I escalate that to my leader on my unit, and my leader with great intentions escalates that to the CNO, or the CEO, and they, with great intentions, they help the nurse put in a ticket, and it stops there because there's no system to escalate it, right? So IT might, you know, with, again, they're a great team too, but maybe they are lacking resources, and so they don't get to it for 2 weeks, or maybe it doesn't get handled, and then Sarah doesn't get her problem solved. So the system is designed for the outcome it achieves. So Sarah stops escalating over time, not because she doesn't care, and not because she's not willing to speak up, but she's just learned over time, when I speak up, it's not getting me where I need to go. Well, when you put tiered escalation huddles in place where you can escalate concerns all the way up to the enterprise by 10:45 every day. And in a year, we escalated almost over 1,000 concerns to the enterprise level. When we started out, we were resolving concerns in about 8.5 days, and we've got down to less than 48 hours. So now what you've got is Sarah escalating, and concerns are being handled in a rapid fashion. So now what's going to happen with Sarah? Sarah's going to start reporting all the time because she knows there's a system in place that's hearing her, listening to her, and enabling her to give great care. So that's an example of a system enabling the behavior and the outcome and the culture that we want to aspire to, right? So that's an example of that.
I love that example. So let's build on that one. I'm going to geek out for a second because this is good. So at first, when you were building these robust systems, was there, in that particular example, was there ever any discoveries that Sarah had escalated something? It went through the tiered process, and here we go again. Sarah escalates it again tomorrow.
The same issue?
Yep.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. So the big step that comes up to Enterprise Huddle, and this is probably no surprise for people who do Enterprise Huddles, is equipment, right? And technology. So that's kind of our big heavy hitters that happen at the enterprise level every day. So those are some consistent things. But I will tell you, we implemented the Great Catch program, which is a recognition program as part of our operating system. So that's people escalating a risk they see in the system today that hasn't yet reached a patient. Okay. When we implemented this system at the beginning of Pulse in October of 20, actually we implemented this in November, December of 22. We in the first year saw over 5,000 great catches submitted through the organization. You talk about medications where you had two medications that could be ordered together that potentially would be harmful to the patient. And through escalation, we now removed that from even being a possibility moving forward. Like those kinds of things happening across the organization. So our reporting increased by 47%. Our event reporting increased by 47%. Our engagement scores on the culture of safety survey, the question of would you recommend somebody to is Prisma Health a place to receive safe care? Do you recommend someone to the healthcare system? Improved by 13% in 1 year. That is because we put systems in place where people trusted that we were listening. Even the great catches alone, I'm going to submit something and I think it's a risk and you've now done something about it. Our Golden Glove winner for the year, our first annual inaugural Golden Glove winner, was a pharmacist. He had submitted 51 great catches in 1 year. 51. And so when you consider that we've got 30,000 team members, you multiply that, you've got an organization that is feeling super enabled and empowered to speak up, and they feel like they're going to be heard. So that's the kind of systems, when I talk about building systems that then build culture or lead to culture, that's what I'm talking about. And in terms of patient experience, when I came here 4 years ago, we didn't really have strong systems in place. And I remember when I came, it was kind of funny. You get a lot of people telling you a lot about how they think patient experience should be run, and you listen and you nod, and you listen because a lot of people do know some really great things. But I also had a vision for certain things that needed to happen as part of the operating system and knew that I had to stay disciplined around them. And I'm going to talk specifically about learning collaboratives for a minute. So we have a medical group of over 305 provider practices. And so we put together a PDSA model through the organization. There was common language put around that. It's called ADTP. But we took that model, very basic PDSA. This isn't like A3s. It's not like, I mean, literally, I believe in just getting to the basics. In an organization that did not do this in a mature way at all. And we created curriculum, a 12-week curriculum around problem identification, root cause, testing the solution, and do you abandon, adopt, or modify after you've done your test cycle? And we, again, from alignment from the top down, I got alignment from leadership that if we were going to do this, I needed them to be committed that every patient-facing area needed to participate in these. These were not optional. So it became, we have cohorts of six departments or less, and we call those learning collaboratives. And the patient experience team leads those learning collaboratives. We've conducted over 200 learning collaboratives in less than 2 years with a team of seven. So when you talk about being resource light and being able to do something at scale, it's possible when you organize it the right way. So you have patient experience team members who are leading these cohorts, and something I told Skip earlier is we didn't have some grand solutions that were discovered during these learning collaboratives that then we took across the system and it improved patient experience. Each individual area was taking through the data and through observations with patients, identifying the real leading drivers of likelihood to recommend. That's our main metric for the organization. And in their own spaces, with their teams and with their patients, chose meaningful things to drive improvement. And through that process, we were able to improve from the 50th percentile rank in October of 21 to now the 78th percentile rank. And we've maintained that for 8 months straight. So we got there because people were individually looking in their departments, focused with their teams, and it wasn't some big bang initiative. The initiative was the system we put in place around the learning collaboratives. And the other thing that I'll add to all of this is, and this is goes for the entire Pulse program, these systems are not perfect. And I think sometimes in healthcare, we think systems have to be perfect statistically. We need to know there's a true cause and effect. We overanalyze so much that we paralyze ourselves and prevent ourselves from really getting to a point of just go do it. And when you pull it together in a very organized way, you brand it, it's less important how perfect the system is, but this, that there's really strong systems in place. And that's how you started to see such rapid results across so many areas, patient experience, quality, safety, engagement, in such a short amount of time. But I think we could all learn a lesson of, I mean, we did this in less than 18 months. It's incredible. I still pinch myself because I think it's so incredible, but we're not done. We are not perfect. We have a lot to learn and a lot to do to grow and improve, but we've become, and we are becoming, an even more mature learning organization where we're really listening to the front line. We've got systems in place and mechanisms by which we can learn from them. And these systems we've put in place are helping us achieve that. But again, I get back to, if I use the learning collaboratives as an example, if we don't have engagement from leaders in those collaboratives, guess what we do as part of the operating system? We go to their one-up leader and we say, hey, so-and-so is really struggling to attend, or you don't seem engaged, or, you know, is there something that, you know, we can help with or that we should know about? Are you feeling like they should be participating? Maybe they shouldn't be. And I'm telling you, 99% of the time, those leaders are like, oh no, I want them participating. And then guess what happens? Those leaders start attending learning collaboratives too. And it's all the way up the chain. And when you've got that kind of buy-in and alignment, this is what happens. And so this isn't magic. It literally is a disciplined approach to structure the systems, pull them together, branded in a way that helps Sarah do the work she has come here to do.
Corey, that was a great discussion that you just went through about how the organization of all of this plays such an important part. One of the things I've heard you talk about before is the importance of celebrating the winners and not really getting caught up on those that weren't participating as much as maybe they should be. Talk to us a little bit about your experience there.
Yes. Yeah, so that has actually been a philosophy of mine for years, is focus on your early adopters and the critical middle, the people who are almost there and they just need a little help, instead of focusing on the people that are just going to, you know, buck the system, really kind of not believe what you're trying to accomplish. And when you start out and do a lot of these things, people I think sometimes they just don't even know what you're talking about. You've got this vision and you try to sell it, but they're like, huh? But we really believe that when you are implementing a system like this, you could go the route of pointing out all the people who aren't doing it, but you're going to spend a lot of time and energy for really not getting a lot of bang for your buck, right? So we believe, let's focus on the ones that are all in, are like all about, let's do this, let's try it. You watch them start to have great results. And then what you do is you celebrate it at leadership meetings. Every leadership meeting, you're celebrating these folks. In other forums, you're celebrating these folks. And what starts to happen, I promise you every time, is that the people who are not on the bus start to go, oh, wow, they start to stand out and they know it. And they're like, they get curious, you know, how did that happen? In fact, a lot of people in our organization were like, how are we getting these results? How can I, you know, and they almost can't believe they weren't part of it, right? But they have a lot to contribute. So that's what we mean. And then we do tighten the screws a bit, right? When you get to a point where the organization is moving forward and you still have people who are not engaged, then you do start to say, what is this, a skill versus will, right? But that just should not be, in my opinion, or in our opinion, the first step. I think really focusing on the people who are engaged at first really helps to propel what it is you're trying to accomplish. And the others start to get curious and want to come along.
Well, Corby, this is fantastic. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation. It's just such a breath of fresh air hearing you talk about driving systems to drive behaviors to get the results that we want. There's no magic wands in this conversation. There's no silver bullets. We're getting what we get based on the systems we have. So I cannot tell you how much I enjoy this. And Corby, I know we've known each other for a while. I really hope that you'll consider coming back on the podcast in the future. You have several Baptist cheerleaders over here cheering you on. This is really important work that you're leading, and I think we can learn so much from you. So just on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, Corby, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing with us about the Pulse program, and we're just so grateful for you and everything going on at your organization. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Thank you.